Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Rakitic con Sergio Ramos. Sergio Ramos otra vez para Acuña. Acuña que la pone. Ocampos el remate. Gol, 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 gol.
Welcome along to the La Liga Lowdown podcast. My name is Ruri Barlow. I'm joined by Paco Pollitt. We've just witnessed match day 10. We've just witnessed Barcelona beating Athletic Club. That will come in the second half of the show. We've got Real Madrid and the Sergio Ramos derby to come. We've got Atleti with a big win, Girona with a bigger win. But first of all, Paco, how are you?
Very well. Everything's going fine over here. Quite healthy after a couple of weeks with problems being, brought in by the little one from her nursery, so the last week has been quite comfortable over here. And Valencia didn't play this weekend, so good news overall.
A more relaxing weekend in the Pollitt household this time round, at least then. Well, without further ado, we will get on to the Sergio Ramos derby, which was a pretty thrilling game. I mean, Sevilla held Real Madrid to a 1-1 draw. I think this game went through a number of phases. Real Madrid probably created enough chances in the first half to win this game. And then Sevilla ended up kind of really coming into the game in the second half, and I thought controlling it for much of it. And it was only Dani Carvajal that came between Sevilla and perhaps a victory. But what did you kind of make of this game, Paco? And in particular, Diego Alonso Sevilla for the first time.
Yeah, I think that Diego Alonso tried to bring in, this kind of rowdy play style, or at least more vigorous play style for Sevilla players who, this season so far, they have made quite a few mistakes already in plenty of games, which eventually cost them plenty of points too. So in this game, I think that Sevilla were, at the top of their game, like 100% concentrated, motivated. As you said, Sergio Ramos was, playing the game of his life, literally. And in that sense, I think that it was a matter of when the... As you know, the wrestling commentators often say, when the hostilities would be unleashed. And in this case, it took place during the second half. The first one was more, plenty of to and fro between both boxes, with Real Madrid obviously with their usual threat in front. Once again, Vinicius was one of the main characters of the game, not for the best reasons. And in the second half, as you said, Alaba was the one in charge of scoring an own goal, even though Sevilla were pressing and pushing forward. And Carvajal was the one to avoid Real Madrid's defeat with a very, very quick counter, only 4 minutes after allowing the opener and leveling the game. And yeah, most of the stats are very, very close or 100% drawn. So in that sense, I think it was a fair result, even though, most of the talk after the game and the post-match interviews were focused on the usual stuff whenever controversy arises, right? The ref calls, two goals being disallowed for Real Madrid. There was a very nasty Jude Bellingham challenge over Rakitic, which, overall wasn't really the best look from the English player. And once again, as I said earlier, Vinicius, in this case, provoking an unnecessary brawl between both sides, things quickly spun out of control, and things went so south so quickly that eventually Ancelotti was the one in charge of deciding that Vinicius wasn't in the proper state of mind of finishing the game, and he quickly subbed him out, because I think that both the manager and everyone watching the game knew that the following challenge or action where Vinicius was in the middle of the fray, it would eventually become a red for him. So I think it was smart move by Ancelotti, and thanks to that, Real Madrid were able to finish their game with 11 players.
Yeah, I mean, there was refereeing controversy. Carlo Ancelotti told Real Madrid TV that he didn't want to say what he really thought about the referee, because otherwise he'd get a big game ban. But I mean, I didn't think the referee was good in this game, and I thought ultimately Vinicius probably could have had a penalty, but as Ewan McTeer, the man who covers Real Madrid, said, Jesus Navas has perfected the Dani Carvajal there of kind of impacting but not giving away a penalty for a player in the box. And yeah, okay, maybe you can give that penalty. I probably would have, but it's one of those that can go either way. And then the two goals, I mean, ultimately the referee did waive play on for one of them, but they were both fouls, so it was coming back anyway. I think Ancelotti is, while not talking about referees, kind of covering up for the fact that Real Madrid here, yeah, that second half wasn't great. They did create enough chances to win this game, I think, in the first half. And ultimately, Rodrigo and Vinicius right now just aren't in goal-scoring form. The thing I wanted to ask you about is Jude Bellingham. Is this oversimplistic to say that if you stop Jude Bellingham, who in three games this season hasn't scored or assisted, and Real Madrid have dropped points twice out of those three games, if you stop Jude Bellingham, do you stop this Real Madrid?
Well, you could say, arguably, that you have at least half of the job done. But, you know, I don't really think so. You know, Jude Bellingham can't score every single game for Real Madrid. That would be absolute bonkers. So I think that, yeah, obviously, stopping Bellingham in that three-quarter line of the pitch and not allowing Real Madrid to be comfortable whenever finishing their plays, obviously, is a massive move on the opposition. But at the same time, I think Real Madrid have plenty of firepower to compensate for Bellingham not being able to score. I think in this game, Sevilla quickly took it into the place where they were going to be more comfortable, you know, taking the game during the first half into the, you know, scraps here and there, plenty of second chances, second plays, trying to get in control of ball possession in the midfield. Great transitions between defense and the counter and the attacking front. And that benefited Sevilla, because they were going to try to take advantage of the set pieces, which they are quite proficient in that sense. And as everyone knows, whenever you have Sergio Ramos and quite of the other Sevilla defenders who are big, bulky, massive defenders, you have more chances. And I think that Diego Alonso is trying to play to Sevilla's strengths in his first couple of weeks as the new manager. And I think that he couldn't ask for more in his debut game, because, yeah, obviously, defeating Real Madrid would have been even bigger. But the way Sevilla played, the kind of mentality, the kind of, you know, as I said earlier, rowdiness in their play style, I think that's the way to go for Sevilla to turning things around. Whereas for, obviously, Real Madrid, Ancelotti can complain whenever he wants. He's in his right to do so. What I don't, you know, understand is why some Real Madrid players, or in this case Ancelotti, sometimes say that they don't speak about referees when they do, when they are not benefited or they feel, you know, their grievances against the ref. And yeah, you could actually see some of the, you know, B-roll cameras after the game. There was one point when Ancelotti was speaking with Vinicius in the sidelines, and the Burgos Bengoechea went close to Ancelotti, tried to, you know, calm him down because he was complaining about what was going on. And, you know, he dared touching gently and slightly Ancelotti on his arm, on his forearm, and Ancelotti saying, you know, no me toques, no me toques, like getting even madder. So not the best, you know, not the best blood between the Burgos Bengoechea and Real Madrid. And you could see that definitely in all of the complaining. Carvajal was absolutely in the middle of every single complaint, as Sergio Ramos was on the opposite side. So overall, these kind of games, which are, I would say, dirtied from the beginning, and they are, you know, not the cleanest in the football sense, with you know, no controversy, no controversial calls by the ref. These are the games, especially whenever they play away from Bernabeu, where Real Madrid are not comfortable.
Yes, it was a very good debut from Diego Alonso's side, who I thought we saw kind of held possession a lot more. They were very good on the ball in that second half and comfortable as well. They looked happy enough moving it through midfield, and I think it was, in terms of midfield, apart from perhaps the Atleti game, the worst we've seen Real Madrid's midfield this season. So things to improve for Ancelotti there. We should mention Vinicius Junior. There's been two recorded incidents of racism against the Brazilian. One of them, Sevilla themselves publicised it and said that they'd ejected him and removed his kind of socio card, I think. And the other one was a child, which was even more depressing, I think. And listen, it's not new. I don't really know if there's that much more to say about it at this point, other than punishment and culture and really, yeah, people need to start kind of, it's on the crowd at this point to start kind of taking it into their own hands. Just finally on this, a word on Sergio Ramos. We saw him winding up Antonio Rudiger, but just how good was he in this game?
I think he was better than average during his tenure as a Sevilla player, because obviously the motivation was off the charts. And if Sergio Ramos is able to keep this kind of level the rest of the season, I think that Sevilla are going to have like zero problems getting away from the bottom spots of La Liga, and they might even achieve something even more notable in other competitions.
Yeah, excellent stuff. And it was a really good game, one of the best in La Liga this season. Speaking of really good games to watch, Almeria under Gaizka Garitano, a new manager, bounced. Happened in about the first 25 minutes when they went 2-0 up against Girona, but my word, did they come storming back. They ended up winning this game 5-2 in the end. Cristian Suárez got on the score sheet. Dovbek got a brace to kind of level, put Girona into lead at half-time as well. They were really, really good, the Catalan side. And yeah, I mean, they're level on points with Real Madrid now. They're the top scorers in the division. They're probably the most entertaining side in the division as well.
Yeah, I think that Granada told the cautionary tale a few weeks ago, and Almeria unfortunately didn't take a few notes on what happened. Whenever you have Girona in front, you can be 2-0 winning the game and you are definitely not safe and not clear from danger, and that's what happened. You know, the first half, the way Girona were able to finish the first half with Dobic scoring a brace in the last few minutes and, you know, ultimately turning things around in a matter of 5-6 minutes just speaks volumes about the level of confidence right now that Girona players have. You know, they are flying, they feel as they are flying. Mitchell is doing an amazing job, and I think the way during the second half they were able to polish the game with a couple more goals just speaks, it's just a testament of how confident they are at this point, and especially how strong they feel whenever they play at Montilivi. That whenever they play at home, Girona might be one of the strongest teams so far in the league whenever playing in their home turf. And unfortunately for the opposition, Almeria are at this point bottom of the league. As you said, it was the debut game for Garitano, and they need to do more. Good news for them is that Baptistão seemed pretty on point, at least to tap it in a couple of times. I think that also during the first half, Embarba did a couple of interesting things in that run for the second goal. So overall, Almeria, as I've said plenty of times in this podcast this season, I think they have a better squad than their current standings are. So hopefully they will be able to just bring it on once again and gather together under Garitano's umbrella and improve their game, especially whenever playing at the Powerhouse Stadium. I think that if Almeria want to have chances of salvation, they need to start securing all of the points being in dispute whenever playing at home.
Yeah, it's certainly a frustrating one for Garitano, because things going so well and then to collapse like that again, I think it shows the the depth of kind of the mental malaise that's set in at Almeria, the fact that they on multiple occasions have dropped leads or dropped games when things have been going well for them. Just before we kind of move on from this game and yeah, give Girona kind of less time than I really want to, because we could talk about them all evening, but Aleix García, if he's not in the Spain squad, I mean, how do we explain that? I mean, Luis de la Fuente surely must call him up after kind of his form in the last month or two.
Well, you could argue towards that Spain has plenty of interesting midfielders at this point. But yeah, definitely the way Aleix García is playing this season has been, absolutely stellar so far. There was one of the assists, I believe, in the second goal to that Tuyamia, you know, that pared between him and Dobik for the Ukrainian striker to finish the play. And overall, he had a massive game, another one. I think both Blind and Aleix García and also Dobik were the standouts of Girona in this game. But again, there's fierce competition in the Spanish squad. And in addition, Rory, I think that the fact that Spain keep winning their games, even though they suffer in some of them, and they are, completing all of their achievements so far, both in the Nations League, now the qualifiers for the Euro 2024, that doesn't really leave that much space for new faces, even though Luis de la Fuente has shown plenty of times that he doesn't really, he isn't really scared of bringing in fresh blood. But most of the new players or the newcomers come from a place where Luis de la Fuente has really seen them, in the under-21s or in the under-19s for Spain, under-17s, under-18s, players which Luis de la Fuente has already handled back in the day. Whereas for Aleix García has been such a, burst through the cracks, and his development this season and his performance this season has been so outstanding that he might need a bit more from him in the sense of more continuity, more consistency, more games with the template of the first 10. I think that if Aleix García is able to play this level whenever the winter break comes around in December, I think that Luis de la Fuente will have no other chance, no other escape that finally calling him up for the Spanish national side.
Absolutely, and just very, very good for him. I'm at the point where I think, you can have someone like Fabian who does what De La Fuente wants, and the fact that he provides kind of physicality, he gets into the box well, he's a pretty versatile player, but then I think Aleix García is just at such a high level right now that you put him on the pitch and he makes your team better regardless of kind of rules and everything. And just kind of before we wrap up the first half of the show, Real Sociedad beat Mallorca 1-0 at home, a goal from Bryce Mendes created by Take Kubo, who changed the game with his introduction. Mallorca a little bit unlucky here, they probably did more to win this game, but an important one for La Real to win, and the sort of game that perhaps in the past they might not have. And Atleti beat Celta Vigo 3-0 on Saturday night at Balaidos. Antoine Griezmann with a hat-trick, Alvaro Morata was involved, not on the score sheet but assisting Griezmann. Atleti are in really stellar form right now, and Celta's Benitez, I don't know how long they've got left.
Yeah, I think that I might go against the popular view in this case, but I think that Celta were very unlucky in this game, and Atletico were clinical in the way they scored their games, and especially the moments of the game where they were able to convert those chances. Because Celta played well, especially during the first half. I think that Celta deserved something more or less in the same way that Mallorca deserved more against Real Sociedad. And ultimately it was, a single play in the second half, as you said, Take Kubo with the assist and Bryce Mendes with the clinical header. But regarding Atletico's game, Ivan Villar mistakes was damning for Celta very early in the game. Till this point, you know, the first 20-25 minutes, Celta had even dominated and the game was pretty balanced. But, you know, after the goalkeeper being sent off, I think that Celta were going to have a very dark future ahead of them. And yeah, Griezmann was able to score from the penalty spot later in the second half. I actually think Griezmann was attempting to cross the ball and not actually finish the shot. And yeah, he was lucky. You know, Vicente Huerta was waiting for the cross, and Griezmann just hit the ball with his ankle, and it went straight in with the second one. I believe, from the top of my head, Bamba had an amazing shot in the second half that smashed the woodwork, and would have been able to cut the difference in half, but. Ultimately, Atletico just trampled Celta in the final 30 minutes because of just how physical are they, how confident are they, and that Celta were, you know, noticing and feeling the physical toll of playing with one man less throughout the first hour. So Atleti keep their victorious run alive, and unfortunately for Celta, I understand Benitez being, you know, at this point feeling the heat. Because even though they have deserved more in at least, and I'm, you know, Celta is more or less a neutral side for me, you know, in my view, Celta have deserved more points at least in 4-5 of the first 10 games.
Yeah, no, I do agree that they've kind of deserved a little bit more, but they, for me, I don't know, I think Benitez has been given not necessarily an easy pass, but I think he's been given more time because of his name. I mean, you can argue that's pretty just because he has a reputation and he's earned it. But I think looking at this Celta side, they played well against these big teams, but in the games against teams around them, I don't think they've been nearly as good. They've not shown up as much. And these punctual mistakes, these things that keep happening, that was the same thing that kept happening to kind of Carlos Carvajal, to Chacho Calvet. These are chronic problems at Celta. And Benitez, so far, I think he's tried to adapt, I think he's tried to play more progressively, but not really achieved it so far. And I think against those big teams, he looks better because he can play kind of more to his skill sets as a manager, but perhaps I'm being harsh on him there.
No, but to wrap this up, I think that in the last 3-4 seasons, Celta have depended like 100% on the performance by Iago Aspas, and they need Iago Aspas to be, you know, at the top of his game. And whenever he isn't, back in the day you had players like Bryce Mendes and so on, but Bryce also left, so Celta don't really have you know, that kind of quality player who is able to you know, shift gears when Iago Aspas isn't on and carry the team on his own. And that's a big problem because Benitez can be very proficient on all of the tactical issues and try to, you know, not allow easy goals on his behalf. But if you don't have the quality both in front and at the back, Celta are going to suffer. And in this case, I think Ivan Villar is the sole responsible for the easy defeat at the hands of Real Madrid, because his mistake was absolutely, you know, unforgivable in the first half.
Yes, I'll concede on that, but in general, I think I want to see more from Celta, even if, as you say, they're reliant on Aspas and they're missing Gabri Vega, of course, this season too. But I'll bring part one to an end there. We'll be back in just a second. I mean, there was not necessarily the best game Barcelona played, but an interesting one. And more trouble for Villarreal and Pacheta in part two coming up in just a moment.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Estar en un partido del filial, pero fíjate.
Este chico debutó en Japón.
Espera Marcos, que viene Joao Félix para lanzar la primera para Marquiu. Va a entrar en el área, enfila Unai Simón. Menudo debut, menudo debut, menudo debut, menudo debut, menudo debut. Gol, 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 gol.
Welcome back to the La Liga Lowdown podcast. It's your free Monday podcast. Remember to subscribe and upgrade if you have not already done so. There's plenty of written content coming your way for the subscribers and, of course, an extra pod a week. Barcelona beat Athletic Club 1-0 at Montjuïc to kind of keep pace with Real Madrid and ensure that the gap was closed this weekend, just down to 1 point, I believe it was. And it was another youngster for Xavi. I mean, Barcelona were playing fine, but not brilliantly in this match. Athletic Club probably had the better of the first half. I think Barcelona improved a little bit in the second. And then Marc Guiu, 17-year-old, comes on within, I think it was 20 seconds you mentioned, and his second touch.
23 seconds, yes.
And finishes. He gets slipped in by Joao Félix and finishes. If there's one thing that I have to give Xavi props for, it's his work with the youngsters, Paco.
Yes, and that he takes the risks. He isn't just all talk, but he actually shows that he trusts them and delivers the goods in that front. I have a very similar experience in the last few months with both Valencia and Rubén Baraja, and those players who, you know, came up through the ranks: Javi Guerra, Diego López, Alberto Marí, and Fran Pérez, all of them, you know, coming from the academy. And in this case, Barça are capitalizing on the benefits of La Masia, and in this case, Marc Guiu, a player whom I hadn't listened anything about, because I believe he's still player for the juvenil side, the under 18s. As you said, 17 years old, first 23 seconds in the top flight, and he scored a massive goal for Barca, because as you said, it narrows the gap with Real Madrid, with El Clásico looming, and actually the way he scored was, plenty of confidence, brimming with confidence. You know, the pass through the defense by Joao Félix and the run into the space, slightly onside because it was very, very close, a very close call. But yeah, the way he finished, Marc Guiu is one of the newest names. One more to add to Xavi's list. Back in the day, Ansu Fati was, you know, more or less a product of Ronald Koeman's era, but in this case, Yamin Lamal, Marc Guiu, Xavi is delivering
Balde.
The goods. Yeah, Balde, all of them are having the chances. And you could see that, you know, the youngster almost crying when the final whistle, and quickly Joao Félix, who was once again Barca's best player, going to hug him and thank him for the goal. The way, I guess you saw that shot on the TV broadcast of Lewandowski, bringing himself up and clapping to the youngster scoring. I think it's very, you know, a significant showcase of how relevant it is for both the veterans and the youngsters to gel and to, you know, mix in Xavi's cocktail in this case. Overall, the game wasn't really that exciting. I think especially in the first half, it was very cagey. As I said earlier, Joao Félix was the best player. Athletic Club trying to bring in their more collective efforts into deactivating all of Barca's, weapons of attack. More ball possession for Barca, but not really that depth on the playstyle. Very, very, I would say overall, very clean game. Nothing really fancy in that front. And yeah, I think that overall, maybe Athletic Club deserve one single point, at least for the collective effort, even though they didn't really have those many chances. But once again, one quick burst of quality unbalanced everything, and in this case it came from Debutante.
Yeah, I'll be honest, I thought Athletic perhaps lacked a little bit of personality in this game. I thought this game was there for the taking for them if they'd grabbed it by the scruff of the neck, and easier said than done than Barcelona.
Yeah, in Spanish.
They
were happy with the point, too happy.
Yeah, and if they'd really gone for Barcelona, I think there's more for it. I mean, Barcelona really struggled to get the ball through midfield. I mean, Gundogan, Gavi, Romeo, you saw very little of them, and they did improve a little bit in the second half, but moving through the Athletic press, they ended up playing long quite a lot. This is obviously a problem, but given the injuries, can we ask more of Xavi? Do they need to be playing better, or is it enough just to get results right now?
I think that the way Barca are pulling off most of the result this season is quite remarkable, because under any other circumstances, or especially 2 years ago under Koeman, they would have been translated into defeats or draws. But I don't know how Barca are able to, slightly make it and barely make it and pick up the 3 points in most of their clashes in La Liga. And the way they are just scraping by, I think it enhances the morale and the confidence of the group. And when all of those players, as you said, which are at this point injured, are recovered and are added once again into the squad, I think that Barca will benefit massively from the players coming back, and also from the ones who are at this point being their substitutes and their replacements and are doing a pretty decent job overall. Because the fact is that Barca, I think Xavi has stated this quite a few times, Barca fans and other sides' fans expect Barca to win and play pretty football or beautiful football. But Xavi, I think, has understood finally that what is going to keep him at the helm and, unharmed by criticism is winning, no matter the cost. So Barca are getting the job done, and I think that's very, remarkable, as I said earlier. But let's see when they play in other competitions. I think for La Liga, this might be enough. Let's see what happens against Real Madrid, for example, in a couple of weeks. And let's see what happens, especially in the Champions League, because I think that's just scraping by isn't going to be enough for Barca.
Yes, it's the Clásico coming up next Saturday. So, make sure you're tuned into that. I think it'll be a real test of Xavi's, because that kind of pragmatism can only go so far, especially when you perhaps have the quality on your side. But it'll be interesting to watch. I do think with the injuries as they are, it's going to be a tough ask against Real Madrid next week. But moving on to a side that have the quality to be doing more, in my view, Villarreal drew 1-1 at home to Alaves. Samuel Morodion opened the scoring, and then there was an equaliser from Gerard Moreno from the penalty spot. But Pacheta, I mean, look, the players might be more content with Setien not there, but they've got worse since Pacheta came in.
Yeah, that's a fact, and numbers don't lie. And as you said, I think Villarreal find it so tough to overturn things whenever they find themselves behind in the scoreline. Omorodion once again doing things, very interesting things for his own future, because everyone knows he's on loan in Alaves this season. But yeah, I think that everyone expected more from Villarreal in a very very special week, because this was the week when the sports ground, the training grounds, were rebranded as Ciudad Deportiva José Manuel Llaneza, obviously as an homage to the legendary sports director for the yellow side. And the way Villarreal defended throughout the first half wasn't really that impressive. Omorodion's goal was, the perfect example, because it was very easy for him to score. And in the second half, Villarreal were a bit better, but at the same time, it isn't enough. Gerard Moreno isn't enough. And the way they are suffering at the back, shows that if Villarreal want to really get something positive, Pacheta has to choose. He has to choose either to get stronger at the back, place more players, change something at the back, train more, train harder, I don't know, or go go forward as a fully fledged, you know, offensive side, as back in the day, I don't know, Unai Emery did sometimes, not always, but he did sometimes. And, you know, he has to choose one of both, one of these two. But at this point, I think Villarreal are in that kind of middle ground where they are not a threat on the offense and they are not, you know, respectable as a side when defending. And that is big trouble for a team as, you know, where its own fans demand as much as Villarreal, because, you know, the fact is that this is a team that should be fighting for a top 6, top 7 spots of La Liga, and at this point they are in the lower third of the standings.
Yeah, big problems for Pacheta. Villarreal on 9 points, the same as Alaves, and just 3 points above Celta in the relegation zone. They've got a week off because their game with Maccabi Haifa has been postponed in the Europa League, which I think is good for Pacheta to kind of get a little bit more of a break and perhaps train a little bit more. But problems for them. They face Granada next in what? Yeah, I mean, Granada could kind of go level with them. Just running through the rest of the games, Getafe drew 1-1 with Betis. Mark Roca opened the scoring. He's been very good so far this season. And Borja Mayoral has been doing very well for Getafe in recent weeks. He equalised. I do wonder if Bordalas, how good this side would be if he did have Enes Unal in it. Osasuna got off not a bad run, but certainly they felt more at home and more kind of comfortable in this game against Granada when they beat them 2-0 on Friday night at El Sadar. Mm. There was protest against Sean Weissman, who's the Israeli striker for Granada. He did not travel for his own safety, as authorities recommended, but he had said that he hoped lots of tons of bombs were dropped on Palestine, and then Osasuna fans turned out with Palestine flags and chanted Weissman die, so that will probably get punished. And Rayo beat Las Palmas away from home. Really good result for them.
What an ending, Dimitrievski, right?
Yeah, Dimitrievski stopped a penalty. And then Rayo got the win through a Bebe penalty. Rayo, really good start to the season. They're 7th with 16 points, although they do have a bit of a gauntlet next. It's Real Sociedad, Real Madrid, Girona and Barcelona coming up for Francisco's side. Just closing out the show, anything you kind of want to mention from those games?
Well, once again, controversy between Bordalas and the opposite manager, in this case Manuel Pellegrini, who was very bickering and complaining about the usual Getafe stuff, and Bordalas said that he's no longer affected by this kind of rants from the opposite coach. Another point picked up by Getafe, who is doing just children's story. They are picking up points here and there for whenever winter comes around, which is immediately. So I think that Getafe are needing a bit more, I would say, a bit more ambition. But if it settles things for, dividing the spoils, settles things for Bordalas, then I think it's good for them. And regarding the rest of the games, Bebe scoring the winner for Rayo Vallecano. I don't know, Las Palmas is this kind of, bubbling side with plenty of flair in some of their games, but they don't have the kind of killer instinct. Whereas for Rayo Vallecano, this season has been able to impress once again. Iraola left. You can kill the man or the man can leave, but the idea remains. And Francisco has been able to take that kind of idea in Rayo Vallecano's playstyle and transition it beautifully into what they are showing this season. And finally, as you said, the remaining game, Osasuna once again making themselves strong when playing at home. Granada under Paco López really struggling at this point. I was watching the standings and they are 2 points away from salvation, but their streak of results, only 3 points from the last 15, isn't really that impressive, only one game being won in the first 10. So I don't know if Paco López should begin worrying about what is going to happen in his immediate future. And once again, I wanted to point out Osasuna, Ante Budimir, once again a brace. He's called the Swan, right? By social media and so on.
El Cisne.
Yeah, maybe because of how long his neck is, actually. But, you know, in this case, he scored one from the penalty spot, the other one very early in the game. And overall, Osasuna were able to capitalize on their accuracy because it wasn't really that, I would say, that the level of superiority for Osasuna. Also, Granada had their chances. But overall, whenever they play at home, Osasuna have made El Sadar their biggest asset and one of the biggest strongholds of La Liga.
Absolutely, yes, a very good win for Osasuna. Paco López probably starting to think about making adjustments. In the Champions League coming up, Sevilla at home to Arsenal, Braga host Real Madrid, Benfica host Real Sociedad, Barcelona hosting Shakhtar Donetsk, and then Celtic are hosting Atletico Madrid as well. We will be back on Thursday with a pod for our subscribers. If you're not, what are you doing? Subscribe, obviously. Upgrade.
Do it. Do it. Remember, you have the full cake ahead of you and don't enjoy only this slice. You know, this slice is very, 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 very tasty. If you like it, just enjoy the full cake and upgrade your Substack subscription, please.
Absolutely. And on that note, I think we shall call things to an end. My thanks to Paco, who has been as brilliant as ever. And thanks to you, the listener, for tuning in. And if you're not a subscriber, we'll be here again next Monday to keep you company with La Liga's action.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.